Did you hit? Because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
And we should have Suri on the line. Morena, Suri.
Morena, Tuvaa. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Suri.
Hey, Millie.
Now, last week we had Jenna come on and give us a great book. And it was to do with time. But this week, the book, There Are Rivers in the Sky, also has a time element in the sense that there's different stories about rivers, I'm guessing, and throughout time.
Totally. It follows like a, what a great like connective thread. Yeah. It's like it follows a droplet of water across three different time periods. And it sort of watches the water witnessing all these human acts. So yeah, time is really strong in this book as well. So There Are Rivers in the Sky is written by a Turkish author. She's an activist and feminist, Elif Shafak. She might sound familiar to some people. In 2017, she was shortlisted for the Booker and the Women's Prize for 10 minutes and 38 seconds in This Strange World. She also wrote hugely popular The Island of Missing Trees, which in the same way that she gives these sort of like human qualities to water, that one looks at like a speaking tree. So I guess like, yeah, land and water is like really strong thematically in her books, as is time. And yeah, so There Are Rivers in the Sky is a super fascinating premise. So it sort of illustrates like the permanence of human acts despite like the impermanence of the human form. It uses this idea of this raindrop moving through different eras of history. So we start in ancient Mesopotamia, where the raindrop, I guess, begins life by falling on the head of King Ashurbanipal. Who's like, yeah, I don't know if I've like read this kind of character in a book before. He's like this quite cool and erudite leader. And when we first meet him, he's kind of like, he's doling out acts of violence on anyone who he suspects of being disloyal to him. But then he also has like the heart and soul of like an academic and poet. Like
very ancient Mesopotamia of him.
It is kind of, yeah. And he's like obsessed with the Epic of Gilgamesh, which his like, I guess, teacher or tutor sort of introduced to him as a child, which is like a kind of very non-benevolent dictator. It's kind of odd to like, yeah, see someone who recognizes like the beauty of humanity, but also like crushing it with this iron fist. And then we sort of shift to London in the 1800s, where the droplet sort of falls into the River Thames, and it follows the life of Arthur Smith, who's born on the River Thames, and he's born into sort of this like abject poverty. But people, like the village around him, sort of recognizes him from an early age as being sort of special and different. And they dub him King Arthur, and he got sort of like this very Dickensian like rags to riches story. And then the story shifts to like more present day, 2014, a 9-year-old girl, Marin, who's being baptized in the Tigris River, which is a river that runs through Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and Kuwait. And
is that the same one that the king of Mesopotamia was also on the bank of as well? River Tigris, I believe.
I think it is. I think, yeah, Mesopotamia sort of encompassed, like, most of that area. So, yeah, it sort of ends back, it ends its cycle back where it began. And Marin belongs to like this small Kurdish community called Yazidis, and the raindrop sort of captures her as she's being baptized in the Tigris River. And this particular area that she's born into is just experiencing the occupation of ISIS forces, which she has like a... So her small Kurdish community, as a result of it, experiences like this violence at the hands of ISIS soldiers, and her life's very much at risk. So yeah, it's kind of like, even though the water itself is like very much the connective tissue between these three different time periods, the kind of unchanging nature of like violence and conquest of humanity is like really the other connective tissue between the three. So some of them, the people in these stories, are like the perpetrators, and then other people like Naren are obviously like the victims of this unchanging nature, human nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's also, the language is like so like lush in it. It's like, I mean, I will say I've had like exams and stuff, but I found
found the time.
It was like the best kind of procrastination. Living in this book for a while. Yeah.
Has it been translated book, or is it originally written in English?
No, originally written in English.
Yeah.
I think Elif Shafak herself might live in London these days,
right,
and it's definitely not in Turkey, yeah. But it has, yeah, it's got like this kind of amazing textural quality in the language that you don't always read a ton of. And sometimes I think like, you know, that kind of language can be like really maybe over the top and flowery, but I think... Leif Shafak really knows when to draw back as well, which makes it, yeah, like it's not like you're wading through descriptions. It's so good.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting concept, this little water drop, because I was reading something somewhere about how everyone in the world has consumed water atoms that William Shakespeare has consumed, or something like that.
Oh my God, wild.
So water is recycles itself, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
totally. And that, I think that's what, like, the book is kind of aiming to show, I guess, like, that even as, like, our corporeal bodies, like, wither and we take our memories to the grave, water experiences this constant cycle of, like, death and rebirth. And I guess that makes it, like, the perfect character to capture like the imprint of human beauty and violence even after we leave and forget about it. And there's like a, so it's not really considered, it's like a smaller part of the book, but it is really what ties it together. At the end, there's like this hydrobiologist who's doing like a research project on whether water holds memories. And I have to admit, I didn't, like, look into, like, whether, you know, the science of it. But it is definitely, like, an idea that's held in, like, you know, different cultures. Like, even, like, in Hinduism, like, in India, there's this idea that, like, you know, the river Ganga holds, like, this, like, spiritual sort of taonga. It's, like, considered to be, like, sacred and life-giving and... given these kind of like qualities of like life. Also like, yeah. And then there's also like a new book out by Rob McFarlane, who's a really great nature writer, called Is a River Alive? So yeah, I guess it's like, yeah, a new way of looking at a resource that is very much like coming under threat.
Yes, very finite. Totally. Very fun.
That is so fascinating. What a fascinating perspective to write a book from.
Yes, a little water droplet. And it's not something I usually think about. We got a texter who was sort of reiterating my point about drinking a glass of water that contains molecules that also pass through a dinosaur.
Wow.
All those years ago.
They said the possibility is 100%. I mean, we'll have to fact check that, but that is a very interesting way to look at, you know, great resource.
Thank you so much for that, Suri. And where can people get this book? Just on the website?
Yeah, thank you for having me. And so you can find it at Time Out. So we're on Mount Eden Road if you want to pop in and have a little chat with us. We love that. Or just timeout.co.nz if you're wanting to buy it online.
Awesome.
Fabulous. Awesome. Hey, thank you so much.
And we'll catch you next time.
Catch you next time. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That was Loose Reads.